UAB MedCast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB MedCast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Welcome. Our topic today is brain tumor therapy is going to the dogs. Yes, you definitely heard that right. And my guests today in this panel discussion are Dr. James Markert. He's the James Garber Galbraith Endowed Chair of Neurosurgery. Dr. Gregory Friedman, he's a pediatric neuro-oncologist. And Dr. Renee Chambers, she's a neurosurgeon, all at UAB Medicine. Doctors, welcome to the show. Dr. Markert, I'd like to start with you. Please discuss brain tumor therapy and what has been thought previously regarding these types of therapies and what have you seen changing?
Thank you, Melanie. I think that, you know, brain tumor, of course, is a very general term. But usually when we think of brain tumors, we think of the most aggressive kind. And the most aggressive type of brain tumor is something called a malignant glioma. It's a tumor that starts in the brain and unfortunately has had a very bad prognosis. The worst of this group is something called glioblastoma multiforme, or glioblastoma, GBM for short. And GBMs have a terrible prognosis. Median survival has traditionally been on the order of 12 months. With recent improvements in therapy, survival has gone up to about 14 to 15 months, which is not a huge increase by any means. Over the course of my career, I've seen treatment go from surgery to radiation after surgery, and then ultimately a different blend of chemotherapies, if you will. The chemotherapy that has shown the most success has been one referred to as temozolomide. And since that time, we have made some progress as a brain tumor community with the advent of a medication called bevacizumab, which is an agent that actually decreases blood vessel growth within the tumors. And while it has not been a game changer, it also has helped in the treatment of these patients as well. The most recent addition to treatment has been a treatment that utilizes alternating electrical fields, and this may also help survival. But still, none of these treatments has been a complete game changer. What we're seeing now is an emphasis more on personalized medicine, genomic-based approaches, and in particular, immunotherapy and oncolytic viral therapy, which we're going to be talking more about in the course of this podcast.
Dr. Friedman, where does pediatric brain tumor therapy fit into this picture that Dr. Markert has just explained?
So we see different types of tumors in children. We see a few of the same types. We also see high-grade gliomas, as Dr. Markert mentioned, but there's other types that are more common in children. And typically in children, we treat these with surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy, which are all very damaging to the developing brain of a child. And so not all children are cured of their cancer, but those that are cured of the brain tumor often suffer from damaging lifelong effects from the therapy. And so as Dr. Markert mentioned, we're sort of entering a new phase with targeted types of agents that try to target different molecular pathways or different proteins responsible for tumor growth and progression. And then now there's exciting developments in the area of immunotherapy and viral therapy.
And as we get more into that, doctors, we're going to speak about some of that and what's different in these therapies. But Dr. Chambers, there are many shared factors between people and their pet dogs specifically. What are some of those and how do they relate to this research on brain tumor therapies?
Well, we know that dogs develop malignant and benign brain tumors at about the same rate as humans, and that the tumors appear similar under a microscope, the histopathology. So we also know that pets share their environment with their owners. For some dogs, for better or worse, even share their diet with their owners. The dog has provided an ideal animal model for diagnostic and therapeutic studies. We feel like successes from the canine studies will help guide treatment in people in the future while providing compassionate care to the pets and advancing the field of veterinary medicine. this is a very good example of the one medicine approach to health. So across disciplines, we use comparative oncology or comparative genomics, for example, to improve the lives of both people and pets.
That's absolutely fascinating. So some of the research that you're all involved in, and as I understand it, are you all involved in this research together? Dr. Markert, tell us a little bit about some of the primary objectives of the UAB SPOR in brain tumors, and tell us how you're all working together.
Well, UAB is fortunate to have a very collaborative group of clinicians and researchers, and as a result, I think that's one of the special things about this place is that all of us work together in a variety of different arenas that ultimately will result in better patient care. The SPOR is a specialized program of research excellence that UAB has held in the past and currently is in the process of reapplying for. It's a special NIH-funded grant mechanism, and we have a variety of different projects. One of them, in fact, is looking at this idea of viral therapy, which we're, again, getting ready to discuss in more detail as a possible treatment for malignant gliomas. Another project in the SPOR is looking at treatments for brain tumor-initiating cells, so-called cancer stem cells, and ways of trying to both kill those tumor cells directly as well as inciting the immune system to actually kill those tumor cells. And a third project in that SPOR is looking at the epidemiology of brain tumors and trying to figure out if there's some basis for mitochondrial gene changes in producing brain tumors. So it's a variety of different approaches all aimed at the same goal, which is, of course, improving the survival and life quality of our patients with brain tumors.
Dr. Markert, I'm sticking with you for just a minute. So in that SPOR and what you're doing, tell us a little bit about using the virus and herpes specifically and how this MO32 was developed. Tell us about that.
So I had the opportunity about 25 years ago when I was a resident in neurosurgery, just training, to work with someone at Mass General Hospital, a neurosurgeon there named Robert Martuzza. And at that time, we were just sort of revisiting the concept of using viruses to treat cancer. That was a concept from years gone by. But what we had in about 1990 when we were looking at this that was different was the ability to genetically engineer viruses. So to take viruses that were in their wild-type state as found in nature and change them and make them more suitable for treating cancers. We had the opportunity to collaborate with another researcher at Harvard who had developed a herpes simplex virus that would actually kill brain tumor cells but not cause damage to any other parts of the body, including the brain. The other huge advantage of using these viruses is that we already have a drug in the clinic that allows us to kill herpes virus infections. So we can stop those infections with a medication called acyclovir. None of us had any interest in producing a virus that would go out of control or injure people. And so starting with a virus like this that both killed tumor cells selectively but also allowed us to stop an infection should it ever be necessary was very attractive. We tried that virus in a number of different clinical trials, and Dr. Freed and I hope we'll talk about one of the pediatric trials later, but we have looked at that in adults and had some marked success with seen arresting or improvement in brain tumor growth in about half of the patients treated very, very late in the course of their disease. While this was happening, though, we were learning that part of the success of this oncolytic viral therapy, this treating tumors with viruses, was due to the immune response that the viruses produced against the tumor. What's so fascinating is that the virus produces an infection, and our bodies recognize that infection as something dangerous, even when it's just confined to the tumor cells. Cancer is very good at hiding from the immune system. It has evolved a number of mechanisms to allow it to escape what we call immune surveillance and kind of fly below the radar. But when we infected these tumor cells with virus, we saw that it sort of woke up the immune response, if you will, and allowed these tumor cells to be attacked by the immune system again. Because we learned that from these initial trials, we went ahead and designed a virus that would incite or induce a much greater immune response, this M032. M032 is a virus that's debilitated, so it still can't infect normal cells like our earlier viruses, But this one also produces something called a cytokine, and the specific cytokine that it produces is one called IL-12. IL-12 is a cytokine that induces the immune system to actually produce a memory response, kind of like a vaccination. So when you get a vaccination, your immune system recognizes, say, that if something like tetanus attacks you, you are ready to fight it. You have memory cells that are looking on the lookout for this. And the same idea applies to this virus. When the virus infects these tumor cells in the presence of IL-12, the immune system is able to better recognize the tumor cells as something that needs to be attacked. So we've now developed this in our laboratories here at UAB, and now are studying this in a phase one clinical trial right here at UAB with many of our UAB brain tumor patients.
Dr. Friedman, up to you. So where do you see this affecting treatment for children?
So right now, we're using a virus similar to M032, but it was the first generation virus that Dr. Markert was mentioning that was tested in adults first. And this is in a phase one study where we're looking at safety and tolerability. And it's the first study of its type in children. And thus far, what we're seeing is that the virus appears to be safe and tolerable in the children. And we're also seeing evidence of responses in patients, that they're having activity, that the virus is actually appears to be replicating and killing cancer cells. And so this first phase of the study is really just about testing that safety and tolerability. We're also, of course, interested in the efficacy and the quality of life of the patients. And then as we move forward, we hope to move to larger studies and expand the therapy further and perhaps look at the therapy in different situations. Right now, when we conduct phase one studies, these are done in children with often multiply relapsed tumors, and typically they've been heavily pretreated so that their ability to develop a strong immune response against the tumor may not be ideal. So in the future, we will look for other ways to use this therapy, perhaps even earlier on in the course of treatment.
And Dr. Chambers, tie this all in with what you're doing. What's the potential for this therapy to achieve successful treatment of brain tumors in both people and pets? Tell us a little bit more about your canine trial.
Right, the trial, and it is called the Canine Trial. It's an NIH-funded trial, part of the Cancer Moonshot Initiative. Through the NIH Coordinating Center, we have standardized methods to measure clinical response and immune responses. Of course, survival and quality of life are obviously the most important clinical outcome measures for everyone, people and pets. And what we plan to do with this trial, we've just enrolled our fifth dog at one of three regional sites. The dogs are operated at veterinary colleges. Right now we have Georgia, Auburn, and Mississippi State. And the first dog was enrolled at Mississippi State. We've enrolled five of an expected 70 dogs. We'll collect data from these dogs and compare the genomics, among other things, of the dog tumors with published information about human tumors, looking for similarities that might represent a therapeutic target. The simple fact that a mutation might be conserved across species, it might be present in humans, and the same mutation might be found in a dog with brain tumors, may indicate the importance of that genetic finding, that mutation, guiding future research.
That's really amazing. So, Dr. Markert, how do you evaluate, taking all of this information that we've heard today, and evaluate the impact of these programs on the outcomes in humans and what you expect or what you hope to happen and see happen from this?
It's a great question. So we have provided to us by the Food and Drug Administration a graded approach to looking at outcome in brain tumor patients and really in all patients involved in clinical trials, because that's where we're at. We are looking at these as agents and people right now as potential efficacious treatments. And so we are at the first stage in evaluating M032, for example. And what we do is give a gradually escalating dose of virus to patients, and then we see how they do. We look and make sure that we're, first of all, not producing any harm, right? That's our first duty, and so we make sure that these are not toxic to patients. And we have a whole series of measures that we look at to help us determine that. We also are looking to see what happens to the tumor, and we get follow-up imaging studies to look at that. Now, interestingly, with viral therapy and many different immunotherapies, sometimes the MRI scans or the imaging studies can actually look worse when you first image them. And it's because the immune cells are sort of rushing into the tumor and attacking it. And on an MRI scan, it's impossible to tell the difference between an immune cell and a tumor cell. So you look at the MRI scan and you say, gosh, there's more mass there. Well, it turns out that some of the mass is immune cells. And if you look later, the tumor will gradually decrease in size. It's very interesting. So certainly we're looking at imaging studies, and we've been grateful to see evidences of tumor destruction by these agents. Most importantly, we look at how the patients are doing, and that includes, obviously, overall survival and how long their patients are living, and importantly, quality of life. We look at what they're able to do, what kind of activities of daily living are they able to do. We were recently funded by another foundation to look more specifically at things like hope and other aspects of patient quality of life with our viral therapy treatment, and we're very interested in seeing how this impacts our patients. One great thing about viral therapy that it doesn't produce some of the traditional side effects of chemotherapy. You don't get nauseated with it, for example, and many times a dose of virus can last for a very long time, so it actually allows patients not to be constantly coming in to get another dose of chemotherapy. So these are the kinds of things that we're looking at to try to understand better what the implications and impact of this research is on patient outcome.
Dr. Chambers, tell us about some of the strategies that might be employed, what they might include to kind of finalize all of this, keep track of it.
Well, in the canine trial, as I noted, the dogs are being operated at the regional veterinary schools. No pets are being operated at UAB. The same MO32 virus that's being used in these FDA-approved trials at UAB and at Children's is injected directly into the tumor bed of the dog shortly after surgery. And as Dr. Markert described, the virus can replicate in and destroy the glioma cells without affecting the healthy brain cells. It also causes the tumor cells to secrete this immunity-stimulating protein, the IL-12, before the cells die, and this can increase the dog's anti-tumor immune response, as in people. So we will measure in the lab samples from the dogs that are taken before and after treatment, not only tissue samples but also from their blood to see what their immune response is. Hopefully, over the course of the year that these dogs are followed, we will see a pronounced immune response by the dog to the tumor. And as I said earlier, hopefully we'll also have genomic data from the tumor tissue itself to compare with the humans that we operate, and then also compare survivals. So see which types of tumors and which patients respond to treatment and have the longest survival.
Wow. Dr. Friedman, as we start to summarize and wrap up this absolutely fascinating segment, tell us about children. And as we look forward to the next 10 years, what are you hoping to see from all of this type of therapy and using viruses? And where do you see it going? Give us a little blueprint for pediatric brain tumors.
Well, I think, as I mentioned up front, is that really our goals are to improve outcomes and lessen side effects from our current therapies. And as I said, the radiation and traditional chemotherapy are so damaging to the children. And so we really believe the future is targeted therapies and the idea of using a patient's own immune system to fight off a tumor or even to take deadly tumor and keep that tumor in check and turn into a chronic disease that can be managed, we believe is the future. And so what we're working on, both in the labs and then as we move these to clinical trials, is to figure out how we can really maximize this type of approach. So we want to be able to maximize that anti-tumor effect of the therapy, and whether it's using the virus in combination with other approaches, those are things that we're looking at in the lab so that we can really maximize this approach and then move it to where perhaps we can avoid damaging radiation or more traditional chemotherapies that attack tumor cells but also attack a lot of normal cells and cause a lot of harm in patients.
Dr. Chambers, your summary. Let the listeners, other physicians, know what you'd like them to know about the canine trial, any questions that they might have, how to reach you. Kind of summarize what you're doing and what you see happening in the future.
Right. So as a neurosurgeon, I operate human patients here at UAB, but in the lab, I'm studying these factors that might cause tumors to develop and grow. And so from my standpoint, the sooner a human patient can be referred, the better. We have many clinical trials and options available to patients. We'd like to provide them with as much accurate information as early as possible when they're diagnosed in order for them to feel confident with the treatment decisions that we'll make together. For the canine trial, for people who suspect they have a dog with a problem, they can contact their regular veterinarian, and we have information available on our website at UAB, and each of the regional veterinary sites has information on their clinical trials websites. This is, as I said, it's an NIH-funded study that will go on for 5 years in the dogs, so we'll be a little while waiting on the final results of the study, but we will try to publish regularly throughout the study with some findings we have.
And Dr. Markert, last word to you. Give us your vision for the next 10 years or so in the field, a little blueprint. Tell the physicians what you would like them to know about this incredible research that you're all doing collaboratively at UAB Medicine.
Well, this is a very exciting time to be in brain tumor research. And as I mentioned earlier, the group that we have here at UAB is a remarkable set of individuals with different skill sets, but all of whom really collaborate well together. And as a result, we're able to combine each of our talents and come up with some really interesting and novel approaches to treating these brain tumors. So I think we're at a great place, a great point in time, if you will, to be able to make a difference. We certainly have the advantages of personalized medicine. We have the advantages of next-generation sequencing. We're doing things like looking at single cells within the tumor and finding out very interesting information. For example, different cells in a given tumor have very different genetic profiles, very different RNA expression profiles. So cells are not going to be subject to a single magic bullet, but are going to require multiple different approaches. What we're learning in the laboratory is that we can combine some of these different approaches. For example, some of these new immunologically active drugs that are in use against melanoma, for example, also work with the virus. They work with other treatments. And so we have a group of researchers here that are really at the cutting edge trying to examine how we can best combine these different agents and come up with long-term solutions for our patients with brain tumors while maximizing their quality of life, too.
Thank you so much, doctors, for being with us today, for sharing your expertise and telling us about your research. It is just absolutely fascinating. I have to say it again because it is very cool. And thank you all for the great work that you're doing. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. I'm Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.